Good Tuesday. Thanks for being with us on Sports360AZ.com. I'm Brad Sussmat. Thanks for jumping on board. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. Appreciate their partnership with us. We will have Peter King coming up here in about 10 minutes. Peter King, man of many talents, SI.com senior writer, the MMQB editor-in-chief, and of course, part of Sunday Night Football on NBC, the NFL insider, Peter King. He joins me exclusively every week here on the show, brought to you by Ameriprise. So we will talk with Peter. Brad Edwards will be with us, ESPN College Football Insider. Yeah, I got to talk to Brad about where things are in the Pac-12, and if the Pac-12 is going to get shut out, if U of A, if Arizona is the team. Eric's back today. So in this new scenario, E, is it it's plausible that U of A could be in the playoff? Not, I'm not saying it, but as it sits today, plausible. And it's my understanding that the Rose Bowl is the national title game this year. And because the Rose Bowl is the national title game this year, they wouldn't go to the Rose Bowl. Is it possible that the U of A could end up getting shut out of the Rose Bowl? Now, of course, U of A fan is saying, well, it's only October 7th. Exactly. What are you bringing that stuff up for? That's, you know, you should be exactly. Focusing on. No, this is what we do here. We talk college football and pro football and things going on in baseball and basketball, too. But so they'd end up in the Fiesta Bowl. That's just one scenario where, once again, wouldn't it be weird, ironic, whatever term you want to use, that the one year that U of A has a tremendous run and could be a team that wants to go to the Rose Bowl, they can't go to the Rose Bowl because this year the playoff scenario, the national title game is in the Rose Bowl. So I kind of like that. You don't. It's fine. I know it's early. Yeah, I know it's early.
I'm not going to discredit U of A for what they did against Oregon, because they took the fight to Oregon and won in Eugene, which is extremely difficult to do.
Right. Here's the however.
However.
Thank you.
Remember the Cal game. Remember them struggling with Nevada. Remember close road win against UT San Antonio.
Right.
Let's give it a couple more weeks.
Tap the brakes.
A little bit.
It's kind of like ASU last year with the Wisconsin game. You know, those things happen.
Those things happen, and it's fine.
You were on the sidelines.
They took advantage of the situation.
If you didn't see Eric's video work at the end of the ASU-USC game on Saturday night, the story is up on Sports360AZ. We did a full recap. Eric was there, shot the whole game. So I haven't talked to you really about the play, because Jalen Strong comes out of nowhere to make the catch. You're actually sporting ASU colors, which is ironic because Eric is not an ASU guy.
Yeah, just whatever was in the closet.
Yeah, I got it. That's what happens when you're married. You just start grabbing things. Yeah.
And I'm wearing white, which looks great on camera.
It makes you look like a Stay Puft marshmallow.
Whatever. It was the play was incredible, Brad, but the part of the whole experience, which I thought was even just as memorable, was watching the USC players walk off the field. And hearing the things that the fans were saying to not only the USC players, just, you're an embarrassment, what has happened to this program, the cat calls. And the players were walking off the field literally with the most stunned, not even upset, just like, I can't believe we just lost that game. I can't believe we found a way to lose that game. And they did. They found a way. Because they, you know, you're up 9.
Sure.
And there's 3 minutes left, and the other team has no timeouts, and they've already unsuccessfully tried 2 onside kicks, and you still lose the game?
Yeah. Well, no, I'm
college football is great, isn't it?
It, you know, college football is, we talk about all the things going on in Arizona. Okay, and the Cardinals losing to Peyton Manning is no great shock. The story that came out of that, and we'll talk with Peter King here in a couple of minutes, was the Julius Thomas cheap shot on Calais. But the weekend, clearly, even here as we're 2 days into the new week, clearly everybody is still buzzing about the ASU win and U of A beating Oregon. And just if the Pac-12 is going to get shut out or not in this whole playoff scenario and all sorts of things. So we're going to do some pro and we'll do some college stuff today. And it's good to have Eric back. Let's get you caught up. Some things on my mind in the world of sports, brought to you by the Honda Resort and Casino. Honda Resort and Casino has been part of Sports 360AZ for 3 years now. 3 years. I walked away from TV and said, enough of this. Let's do this. We can talk about everything we want and do so with depth and not sit there and say, you have 30 seconds. And the Honda Resort and Casino from day number one said, wherever you go, whatever you do, we want you to know that we're with you. And they've been tremendous partners with us. And the Honda Resort and Casino, I can say, full confidence, this time of year, in October, to head up there for the weekend, to get away from the hustle and bustle, even if you have your own summer cabin, now fall cabin, your own second home up there, why not head up and go over to the Honda Resort and Casino on a Friday night or Saturday night for the entertainment, eat some great food, have some fun, pull down on the slots, and do so all up in the beautiful White Mountains. If you've not experienced the White Mountains, you are missing out on Arizona. And the Honda Resort and Casino, that's the place for you to be. The Honda Resort and Casino, just outside of Pine Top in the beautiful White Mountains. Again, part of Sports360AZ.com since day number one. Okay, Peter King here in about a few minutes. So the Cardinal thing, I made it over to Bruce Arians yesterday. I had a couple of meetings. I walked in a couple minutes late. I don't like doing that because I missed right off the top, so I have to read back on what was said. I like to hear the context myself. Essentially, it's this. The quarterback situation is up in the air here on Tuesday. We don't know the following. A, is Carson Palmer's nerve going to respond positively? Yeah, it sounds like it may, but we know that things can regress in a hurry, that last week it went backwards, the week before it went forwards. We don't know Drew Stanton and his ability to pass the baseline concussion tests, meaning we don't know if the Cardinals are going to have either their quarterbacks, both of their quarterbacks, one of them, we don't know. In fact, Bruce Arians wouldn't even rule out Logan Thomas being the starter yesterday for this Sunday's game against Washington out in Glendale. So here is Bruce Arians on expecting to have Carson Palmer for this Sunday. This was Bruce yesterday.
I hope so. That's what, you know, that's what we got our fingers crossed, and that's what everybody keeps telling us, that it could, when it comes back, it's going to come back. And, you know, and hopefully Drew will pass the protocol, and we'll be prepared if either one does not happen.
Yeah, hopeful. A lot of hopefullys there. Hopefullys, hopefully, my wife and I are married for 50 years at 26 years right now. Hopefully, I make it off the 101 today without getting run off the road on the way home. Hopefully, the rain holds off. Hopefully, both quarterbacks are able to go. A lot of hope going on there. So that's the big story on that front. The fact that where the Cardinals are with the Julius Thomas cheap shot on Calais Campbell. I agree with what Bruce Arians is saying. I just don't see practically how the NFL can enforce this. So here is more of Bruce Arians on the chop block by Julius Thomas on Calais Campbell. This was Bruce from yesterday.
You'll never convince me it wasn't premeditated. And the one guy set him up, and the other guy, it's worse. When you're engaged, you feel people around your legs. It's the lower chop block's the worst one. A guy sets you up and he grabs your attention, and then somebody else hits you in the knees. There's no call for that in this game.
Okay, so what Bruce would like to see is for an opposing player to be suspended while the opponent is out recovering from the injury. So how do you flip that around? Let's say it was the Cardinals that were in the case of doing the one that did the chop block, okay? Or whatever penalty it may be, and it takes somebody out, and you're going to argue it all day long and say it's completely unfair. How do you legislate that? And if you end up having a guy say, we're going to go after a star player versus just going after a guy, you know, Bounty Gate had its place. And to think that that stuff didn't happen. So Thomas is going to get fined. And Thomas is hoping he doesn't get suspended out of all of this. I don't know if he's going to. I just don't know how you could legislate that. I'm sure that many of you have your ways and your thoughts and your theories. It sounds great. I'll talk with Peter King in a minute or two about that. So that's where we are on the Cardinals front. The game last night, the penalties by Seattle, I'll admit this. I did not sit and watch the game from start to finish in real time. I zipped through it last night after going home. I was a dad, which is more important. Took my son to see a movie screening last night. I didn't want to see Seattle, Washington in real time. What I saw were a lot of penalties by Seattle, 13 flags. When I watched it back, I saw Russell Wilson just go crazy last night. There's people that think that Russell Wilson shouldn't run as much as he does. I think Russell Wilson doing what he does along with Marshawn Lynch is very smart. And to try to take away what he's all about, That's what makes Seattle go. He makes every defensive coordinator stay up late at night. Where a guy like Carson Palmer sits back in the pocket, a guy like Russell Wilson, different story. He gets out there and makes you have to think a little more. On the other side, Peter King, MMQB, NBC Sports, NFL Insider. He joins us exclusively every week. I'm Brad Sussmat.
For unique angles, content, and guests, check out our podcast center, available 24/7, 365 at sports360az.com.
It's a good Tuesday, Brad Sussmat, Sports 360 AZ. In about 15 minutes, Brad Edwards, ESPN College Football Insider, on all things Pac-12, maybe being shut out, playoff changes, and everything. But as promised, Peter King joins us now. Peter King, brought to you by Ameriprise Financial. Everyone has retirement questions. Ask Ameriprise Financial Advisor Jeremy Kitamura about planning for a more confident retirement. Jeremy's office in Scottsdale, and he can be reached at 480-922-4216. 480-922-4216. Peter King, SI.com senior writer, MMQB editor-in-chief. Check out MMQB.com. He joins us every week. Hi, Peter. How are you?
Brad, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well. I've got a grumpy Bruce Arians out here about chop blocks, and I'm curious from your perspective. I'm sure you saw the Julius Thomas play on Calais and Bruce's response that now he would like to see a suspension for the amount of time that Calais is out for a player that does something like Julius Thomas. Let's just start there.
I don't think you're ever going to get that to happen in sports. I think you're going to get a significant fine here. I don't think you're going to get a suspension. And, you know, I'm all for Hammurabi's code and sort of the principle of it, an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. But I don't think it is feasible to say to the Denver Broncos, okay, Julius Thomas is out for 1 week or maybe four. I just don't think it's practical. Now, if you ask me about the play itself, the play itself, and I didn't know the absolute rule until late Sunday night. I talked to Mike Pereira because I had read, we were at football night in America, and this happened just, and I went on the air like, you know, maybe 25 minutes after, no, maybe about 15 minutes after Arians said what he said about it being the dirtiest play he's seen in his years in football. So I didn't have a chance before we went on to look up the absolute wording of the rule or who was right or who was wrong. But then I read about it, and I read this stuff about the lure block.
Right.
Okay, the L-U-R-E, which I had never heard of before. And I doubt many football fans had ever heard of that at all. And so I called Mike Pereira. I've known him for a long time since he was the NFL supervisor, vice president of officiating. And, you know, I asked him about the play, and he you know, because I had read the part of the rule book, and I ended up writing about it in my column on Monday.
Right.
And he said, absolutely, this is a foul. This is a textbook case of the lure block where Ryan Clady set up to block – to block Calais Campbell, and he was in his pass blocking stance. And as Calais Campbell is getting ready to go at Ryan Clady, here comes Julius Thomas right at the knees. And so by the book, this is a lure block, and this is going to be a case for discipline in the NFL, I feel sure. But again, I don't know that it's worth a suspension, but I do think it's definitely worth a very significant fine.
In your view, covering the NFL for as many years as you have, how dirty of a play was that that you viewed?
It's a dirty play to me, but I'm not even sure that Julius Thomas knew what he was doing at the time was a dirty play. And, you know, you say, well, how can that be? You called it a dirty play. Well, the effect of it is that it's a dirty play. If Clady was set up right there, in other words, it'd be one thing if Julius Thomas was set up in front of Calais Campbell and, you know, between Calais Campbell and the quarterback, and it was clear that Calais Campbell was going to have to get through Julius Thomas to get to the quarterback. But if you draw a line between Calais Campbell and the quarterback, the person in the way is Ryan Clady.
Correct.
So it's clear that Clady is the prime guy who's going to, you know, try to block.
Engage. He would engage.
Try to block him. So to me, it's a situation where Calais Campbell was not primarily concerned on this play with Julius Thomas. And that's why it becomes a play that really is an unethical play.
If, and I've had this question asked to me in a number of different ways, if Clady engages, I think Clady was surprised by fans that they've seen it out here, is that Clady was surprised that Thomas did what he did, that that Clady was going to engage. Did you see it that
way?
Yeah,
no question. And if he sets up as though to engage the pass rusher, and then Calais Campbell is hit, you know, where he's hit around the knees, then that is the classic lure block, and that's why it is a violation. It's a violation of the rule.
Peter King, SI.com, senior writer, MMQB editor-in-chief. Check out MMQB.com, brought to you by Ameriprise Financial with Brad Sesmat. Washington comes to town this week. This is a large Native American state. The word Redskins is going to be used by some, used by others. Where do you fall on this? Because I know it's going to be a talking point this week here in Arizona.
I fall on this that for the last, I guess, 14 months, I wrote in August or early September of 2013 that I was going to stop using the word Redskins in everything that I wrote because it offended enough of the both Native American and general population that I thought the word was offensive. It's listed as a slur in dictionaries that, you know, in widely read and widely read dictionaries. And so to me, if the definition of a word to some is a racial slur, I don't think we should be using it.
And it's interesting in this state because in traveling and over the last year and a half, and I did read what you wrote last year, I just wanted to hear it from you yourself and for the audience. There's those, Peter, on the reservation that would say, we really like having a team named after us, that this doesn't bother us at all. This is all much to do
right.
about nothing. However, there are those as well on the reservations here in the state of Arizona that have said this is completely offensive. It's almost like it's divided within themselves.
No question. We had one of our writers at the MMQB.com, Jenny Varentis, last year, spent about a month. She actually went to a couple of reservations, including one in rural Arizona. I'm trying to remember what reservation it was. I just don't remember right now. But I think the perception that the team, that the Washington team would have you believe is that, you know, really it's a very, very small minority, even of Native Americans who are opposed to the name. We did not find that at all. Mm. We, you know, talked to people on at least 8 reservations in the United States, both in person and on the telephone. And I can tell you that it's significantly more than 10%. Of the Native American population that doesn't like the name. But you're right, there are some who do like the name, and there are some who believe that it's one of the only ways to draw attention not only to Native Americans, but to the plight of Native Americans today.
One other question about the Cardinals with Peter King this week. Possibility that Carson Palmer and Stanton will not be cleared. We'll find out later in the week in the case of Stanton, and that Carson's nerve will still be bothering him. Peter, if you were to talk about Tom Moore for 60 seconds, what would you say about Tom Moore? Because this week, Logan Thomas may be the one thrown in the wolves. He was thrown in the wolves at Denver. And I've talked about Tom Moore in great lengths on the show through the years, of what a fabulous football man he is to have here in Arizona, along with Bruce. But yourself on Tom Moore.
The one thing I would say about Tom Moore, and one of the reasons why Peyton Manning really, really liked him as his coach for so long, is that he's totally, totally unflappable and believes that it doesn't matter if you're playing a game where you're a 4-touchdown underdog. I mean, that doesn't happen in the NFL. But no matter what the odds would be, Tom Moore would convince you in a very quiet, understated way by Tuesday night when the game plan is done, and he calls you and he says, Peyton or Logan or whoever the case may be,
sure,
we got some really good plays in the plan this week, and you know we're going to make some big plays in this game. Here's what we can see. In a very quiet way, in an understated way, he fills you with the confidence that we're going to give you the kind of plays and personnel packages in this game that are going to give us a great chance to win. You just have to execute them. And over the years, it happens so often when, you know, they bring in a Qadree Ismail to Indianapolis or, you know, a Jacob Tammy or just like lesser guys when they add injuries to the big guys, to Reggie Wayne or Marvin Harrison or Dallas Clark, and all of a sudden they'd bring in these Bijan Robinson, and they would figure out a way, and they always did. And when you have Peyton Manning, it's a little bit easier. But I'll say this about Logan Thomas. One of the reasons why Tom Moore and Bruce Arians are good for Logan Thomas is that they take what he does well, which is throwing the ball downfield, and that's one of the strengths of those guys, especially with Bruce. He loves throwing the ball downfield. You know, to him, dink and dunk ought to be a curse word or a curse phrase because he wants to challenge people downfield. And that's why in a week like this where Logan Thomas might play against a very, very aggressive Washington front, I would say, hey, good. Let's throw the ball deep a few times and see how aggressive that front is and see how aggressive their safeties are.
Couple quick hits before we let you go. Raiders coaching situation. John Gruden's name's popped up. Jim Harbaugh's mess has popped up. Do you anticipate either one of those guys showing up in Oakland, Peter?
No. I don't think either one of them will. And I think that one of the things that teams have to be very careful of in this day and age, they have to be careful of the circus coming to town. I think when you talk to a guy like John Gruden or Bill Cowher or Mike Holmgren, you have to ask yourself this question, okay? Do I want a guy who's been out of it for a while, who has gotten used to the life of, you know, sleeping till 7 o'clock or whatever, you know, whatever. And, you know, a coach's life, as Bill Parcells said, the coaching life is not for the well-adjusted. And it isn't. And so you wonder, Bill Cowher, he's got an apartment in New York now. It's not that he's soft. I'm not saying that he's soft. But I'm saying he's gotten used to living a totally, absolutely different life. Can you throw yourself back into the mayhem of the NFL coaching life and do it the way you once did it with the same passion, with the same fire? And that's what I would really wonder about with guys who've been out of it for a while.
Best game of the coming week, Dallas at Seattle. Are the Cowboys really a 4-1 really good football team?
I think they are a legitimate 4-1 team. I don't think they're going to win in Seattle. I think the interesting thing about this week's schedule is that in the NFC East, which I thought was going to be a walkover for the Philadelphia Eagles, at the end of this weekend, I think you're going to have a three-way tie at 4-2 between Philadelphia, Dallas, and the Giants. Dallas loses up at Seattle, and I think the Giants go in on Sunday night and win at Philadelphia. They're averaging 35 a game, and in the last three games. And on the other side, the Eagles have 22 offensive possessions the last 2 weeks, not including kneel downs and stuff at the end of half or games. They have 22 offensive possessions, and they got 2 offensive touchdowns. So I think they're in trouble right now on offense, mostly because they have had some mayhem on the offensive line. But as far as Dallas goes, you know, I think it's up to Jason Garrett now to try to preserve DeMarco Murray. He's obviously running way more than he ever has in his career. He's already got 130 carries, and last year he only had 217 total. So I think they're going to try to exercise some caution with him starting this week in Seattle.
Thanks for your time as always, Peter. Talk next week.
Thanks a lot, Brad.
Good visiting with you, Peter King. He joins me every week on the show, every Tuesday, talking about what's going on around the National Football League. Always good to check up and check in with Peter King. Brought to you by Ameriprise Financial. Everyone has retirement questions. Ask Ameriprise Financial Advisor Jeremy Kitamura. Jeremy, great guy, about the new Confident Retirement Approach. Call Jeremy today to review all your wealth planning needs. Jeremy's office is in Scottsdale, Arizona, and can be reached at 480-922-4216. 480-922-4216. Ask for Jeremy Kitamura, bringing you Peter King. On the other side, everything around the college football ranks with Brad Edwards, ESPN College Football Insider. Is the Pac-12 in trouble? What does he make out of U of A, ASU, and much more? That's next. I'm Brad Sussmat, Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. And of course, you can follow me on Twitter at Brad Sussmat.
On Deacons, Bercovici. He's just going to air it out deep downfield, and no white shirts around.
Oh, Jalen Strong! Caught for a touchdown! Jalen Strong makes the catch for the touchdown, and the Sun Devils have won the game on a Hail Mary on the final play!
It was IMG with the providing the audio there of Tim Healy's final call with Jeff Van Raphorst. ASU, remarkable fashion. What's amazing to me, as we welcome you back, Sports 360 AZ, and of course, we partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. What's amazing to me is every college analyst that we've had on this show had U of A and Cal leading in the Pac-12 South and North all the way back in August. And I'm just joking about that, but that's what kind of season it's been. And the playoff changes everything. I mean, I don't know if the Pac-12 is going to get shut out. I don't know if ASU is going to find their way back into this. If U of A wins at home on Saturday night, Rich Rod is in a spot to be 6-0. Never seen that in Tucson. Brad Edwards breaks it all down for us. It's good to have Brad back on the show, ESPN College Football Insider. His thoughts on upset Saturday. Where do you want to start here in the Pac-12 conference? What is the angle most interesting to you, Brad?
Well, you're right. It's like, where do you start with the Pac-12? I think big picture nationally, while Oregon's loss and UCLA's loss, you know, theoretically were no more damaging than Oklahoma's loss or Alabama's loss this past weekend, they felt different. And the reason they felt different is because that was really the first time that you saw Oklahoma and Alabama look vulnerable. Whereas for UCLA, you had seen the struggles, and I think they hoped that the ASU game previously had been a sign they were coming out of that. But then, obviously, we saw against Utah that, you know, UCLA is not going to dominate a lot of people this year. And then with Oregon, you know, we had seen them, you know, taken somewhat to the wire by Washington State in their previous game. And they obviously struggled for the first half against Michigan State. And so I don't have the same feeling with Oregon or UCLA that they can just bounce back from that loss and run the table like I do with Alabama and Oklahoma. And so I guess my point to all this is that this is already feeling like a year where it's almost inevitable that the Pac-12 champion is going to have at least two losses.
Right.
And I know the people at Arizona are saying, we haven't even lost one yet. Well, okay. I think it's coming. but the question is that going to is that going to knock them out of the playoff? Because coming into the year, we were all talking about the Pac-12 as the second best conference behind the SEC, and even arguing, you know, could it make a case for being the best? And I think what I see right now is there's not a great team. There are a lot of really good teams. In fact, I think if you go on the road in the Pac-12, the only team that I would not worry about on the road if I were a good team would be Colorado. And even they are you know, considerably better than they were a year ago.
Yeah, they're getting there.
That shows the depth of the conference, but at the same time, I'm not sure that there's a great team out there. And I think that's what we have to wait and see over the next 2 months. Will someone kind of rise up and show themselves to be great and show themselves to be the cream of the crop in this conference?
Do you see then Oregon-UCLA this week as a playoff game?
Yeah, I think the loser of that game is in big trouble. Now, we do have to take a step back and look at last year and say, okay, you had Stanford and ASU, both with two losses, playing for the conference title a year ago. And at the end of that game, Stanford, if there had been a four-team playoff a year ago, would have been in the conversation because their schedule quality was that good that I think you would have had to put them up against the one-loss teams out there and given them consideration. But it's just that I don't see a team right now that has consistency on both sides of the ball. You know, I see a lot of
good offenses, but even a couple of the good offenses are having trouble keeping their quarterback safe.
Right.
And then I see Stanford, which plays great defense, but is really struggling offensively. And I don't know what to make of the Pac-12 right now. I think it'll sort itself out to some degree. But certainly whoever loses with Oregon and UCLA this week is going to be in a position that nobody really saw them being in when we started this thing a little bit over a month ago.
Talking with Brad Edwards, ESPN College Football Insider, with Brad Sussmat. In hearing you speak then, I'm not putting words in your mouth, but it sounds like you believe that the Auburn, Mississippi State, Alabama top part of the SEC is better than the top part of the Pac-12.
Yes, I do.
By a long ways, or is it narrow? Is it narrow, Brad, or is it by a long ways?
Well, see, I think it really, and this is what we were talking about over the summer, which is that even though the Pac-12 had an edge at quarterback, I think a lot of people still, I think I said this on your show, that I still lean toward the SEC because I think they're better on the lines of scrimmage.
Mm.
And you look at the issues that like Oregon and UCLA are having on their offensive lines right now. And I completely recognize that injuries are part of this. I'm not suggesting that they have inferior talent. Injuries are part of football. But where we sit right now, the defensive fronts in the SEC, well, I mean, you think that UCLA and Oregon are giving up a lot of sacks right now?
Right.
I mean, if they played some of the better teams in the SEC, it would be really bad. And so I think right now that's what's separating the teams at the tops of the two leagues is line play, really on both sides. I mean, UCLA, they blow my mind because they have so many highly recruited players on their defensive front, and yet they're not stopping anybody. And I don't understand why. They should be a lot better than they are because they have great talent. They have guys who look like they'll play in the NFL. But there's something missing there, and I can't quite put my finger on it.
What do you make out of the job Rich Rod is doing? I mean, I know you mentioned earlier that the loss is going to come at some point. They've got SC at home this week. They have Washington State the week after that, then at UCLA their next three games. The job that he's done in taking a program that's never done anything. Football is something to do before basketball season starts when you're a U of A fan. That's just a fact. The job that he's done this year, are you buying into it yet, or you still need to see more body of work because of the nail biter against Cal, the Hail Mary, the close win over UTSA? Where are you at on U of A this year?
Well, I'm a big fan of Rich Rod, and when Michigan let him go, I figured he was going to go somewhere else and win because he's a good football coach. Now the question is, you know, could he? Or I should say, the question was at that time, and when he was hired by Arizona, could he ever get that program to the place that he got West Virginia, where they were actually contending for a national title? And I still am not sure whether he can or can't. But it's not remotely surprising to me that he has them, in a position where they're, at least in the middle of the season, you know, at the top of the standings in the Pac-12 South. And the fact that he's managed to win 8 games each of the last 2 years after inheriting a really bad situation, he is a really good coach. And the question is he going to be able to get the type of elite talent in there in order to be a national title contender? And you could say he kind of caught lightning in a bottle at West Virginia, having Pat White and Steve Slayton at the same time. And maybe he's got that right now. He's got a couple freshmen there at quarterback and running back that are going to have a chance to grow together. And I think his offenses are always going to be good. At this point, I think if he can find a way to recruit some solid defensive talent, then I think Arizona's got a chance to have some staying power.
Flip it around on Todd Graham. A bye this week, then Stanford here at Washington. Notre Dame's in the early part of November. What does Todd Graham have this year? I'm not quite sure, just watching them, that they even know what they've got for this season.
Well, I think last week was huge. Just being able to come out of there with a win, however miraculous it might have been, and to just to get to this point, having played 2 games without Taylor Kelly and have only 1 loss, they're sitting in a good position still. And I don't know how much longer Kelly's going to be out, but I think Berkovici's he's played well enough that their issue is not their offense. Their issue, like pretty much everyone else in the conference, is defense. Can you get enough stops? And so I think that there's no reason to believe that Arizona State or half the teams in the Pac-12 are not going to have a chance to win pretty much every game they play the rest of the year, because I think if, you know, the nature of these games is they're going to be high scoring and they're going to come down to turnovers and special teams plays and things like that. So they're in a good place, and I think the key for them is going to be the key for everyone else, which is can you improve defensively? Because I think ultimately whoever plays a little bit of defense is going to end up winning that conference.
With Brad Edwards, before we let you go, a couple other questions. TCU, a viable candidate in the Big 12?
Oh, absolutely. TCU has upgraded their talent over the last couple of years since joining the Big 12 to the point where I think they finally have some, not only, you know, frontline talent in terms of starters, but also some depth that's worthy of you know, playing in that conference. And so they showed you against Oklahoma that they're good enough offensively now to be a threat. Their defense has always been there ever since they came over from the Mountain West, but the offense had a long way to go. And I think they're at a point now where they're capable of beating anyone on a given day. The big question is, you know, can they go on the road now and do what they did last week, do that against Baylor?
Mm-hmm.
Because if they can, TCU is sitting pretty. And I realize that, you know, that's another conference where there are a lot of really good offensive teams. And so you never know when that week's going to come where, you know, where someone hangs 40 on you and you can't answer that. TCU's schedule sets up where if they can get through Baylor this week and they're undefeated halfway through with wins over Oklahoma and Baylor, Kansas State comes into their place, Oklahoma State comes into their place, and if they just hold their home field, they've got a legitimate chance of being, I mean, I guess you'd say this year's Auburn, you know, a team that had a losing record last year and just you know, puts together a magical run and ends up in the top four, because you can say whatever you want about how weak their non-conference schedule is, but I refuse to believe that the selection committee would not take an undefeated team from a major conference, and I think TCU's got an excellent chance to go undefeated if they can just beat Baylor this weekend.
So I'm curious, from your view, how long do you think we stick with four teams in this playoff?
You know,
because
the
contract says, we all know they're going to push for more, right, Brad?
Right.
I mean, how long can they just stick at four?
I think they want to give you the impression that the fans are not going to be able to dictate it. You know, like it's not going to be, you know, hey, everybody, we want to see eight. So eventually they'll cave into the pressure from the fans. And in fact, they were given the impression that that's why we have a playoff now, is because the fans demanded it, which is not true. The fans will demand eight. Ultimately, it's going to come whenever the majority of the schools need the money bad enough,
yeah,
in order to make it happen. Because, you know, we've been talking for several months now about all this, you know, Power Five autonomy and the fact that they want to give this cost of attendance stipend. They want to increase some of the other benefits to the student athletes in terms of their long-term insurance coverage and things of that nature. All that stuff costs money. And what you haven't seen a whole lot written about is where that money's going to come from. Well, one of the places that it could come from is expanding the playoff from four teams to eight teams and getting the extra, you know, TV revenue that's going to come from that. Because, you know, as much as the four teams will make more money than two did with the BCS,
right,
eight teams will make more than four. And so I think it's just a matter of how long is it going to take before the schools are desperate enough for money that they agree to do it.
Not if, but when.
When, yes.
Yeah. Stay well. Appreciate your time as always. We'll see you down the road. Thank you.
All right. Take care, Brad.
You got it. Brad Edwards, ESPN College Football Insider. Always good to have him on the show. You know, I take a breath after the last 30 minutes and say, Peter King and Brad Edwards just absolutely killed it today. So it's just so much fun to do this every day. When
Who doesn't love football season?
Oh, my gosh.
Football season is fun.
Peter King talking about Tom Moore, I just kind of sat back. It's like a fire with a couple logs on, you know? Just let me throw a name at you and just go through it.
Tell me a story.
But, you know, the chop block stuff is very interesting. There's a story, a couple stories today, that as the show progressed, and I have people that send me stuff throughout the show, which is great. You know, if you ever want to shoot me an email during the show, I don't care if you want to get on my case or not, although I'd rather just don't want to deal with it. You know, you screwed up this or you said that, but it's fine. It's brad@sports360az.com. And I know there's people that send me stories that they see, and it's terrific. One of them that I'm going to talk about on the way back here is a school canceling their football season because of bullying. And some thoughts on that and much more as we continue. Also, Tiger and Phil may join like partners here on deciding who the next captain's going to be. That's for the Ryder Cup. That's around the corner. I'm Brad Sussmat, sports360az.com. Plenty of content on sports360az.com. High school, college, pro. We do this every day for a couple of hours. Partnership with the Arizona Republic, azcentralsports.com. Appreciate them as well. Back after this timeout.
For in-depth, unique coverage from the high schools to the pros, follow us on Twitter at Sports360AZ.
So Eric and I were talking. He just got back from Los Angeles, had a wedding to go to yesterday. A Monday wedding?
Monday wedding.
Why didn't you do that? It would have saved me a weekend. What's the deal?
It wasn't my decision.
Wasn't your decision, huh?
Wasn't. You had to do it all. I didn't pay for it, so it wasn't my decision.
Right. What has it been, 3 months? And you're still getting to work on time?
Yeah, like 2.5 months. Yeah.
Yeah. Does it feel like 2.5 years yet?
Nah, it's all downhill from here. You make it to the first two.
It is all downhill. Boy, is it downhill. I'm under the gun. My wife has candles on the cake tomorrow. And there's a lot of candles now starting to show up. And I try not to remind her that.
Let me know how that goes.
If I'm not here tomorrow, you'll know. So we're taking the show to Tucson Thursday. Did we decide that?
All signs point to yes.
All signs point to Tucson.
Always good doing a show at the Lowell Stevens football facility. Good
Greg Byrne going to come
good
by?
Good people down there.
We're probably not going to get any coaches or players because it's before the game.
Correct.
So but it's fine. I don't care. We'll go do the show from Tucson. I'd rather be at a place that has a great story this week. And there's a great story. This is the biggest football game for U of A in the Rich Rod era for sure. For sure it's the biggest. You're on national television, 7:30 Saturday night. You're alone in the conference standings. It's a game within the Pac-12 South. The team that you beat or is coming in got beat on the last play of the game. It's kind of funny. Here's Rich Rod on the Hail Mary that he had against Cal versus the Hail Mary that ASU had on Saturday night. Somebody asked Rich Rod about the two Hail Marys.
Well, ours was a hell of a lot more fun for me, you know. They're always improbable. You know, there's always different reasons why they had success, and there's always something that led up to it. You know, whether it was, you know, for us it was an onside kick or a few possessions earlier. For them, for USC, it was maybe the touchdown before then that they gave up on a pass play, on a scramble. So there's always things that lead up to it that allow that to happen.
And here's Rich Rod on what he is facing, he and the Wildcats, Saturday night showdown in Tucson against USC.
Yeah, you know, from what I understand, USC is still favored, and we all understand why. So, you know, there's one guy in our program that was recruited and offered by USC, and he was there first, and he's no longer there, and he's our backup quarterback. So it's our guys know how talented they are.
That's really interesting. So Scroggins was the only one that was offered. And you don't think coaches don't pay attention to lines as a way to motivate kids? Hey, so their favor doesn't mean, hey, the bookies, the guys putting the money down. It's just out there, which is fine. So we'll do the show Thursday in Tucson. I know we have Jake on Thursdays, so and Jake will have some thoughts on the game. Jake's fine about this whole ASU-U of A stuff until it's ASU-U of A week. He's actually sane and sober, unlike a lot of people around this, where they just lose their minds and get all worked up. I can't believe you're giving U of A more attention than ASU. Yeah, they deserve it, okay? They deserve more attention right now. This segment of the show brought to you by Santan Ford. Santan Ford, where it is all about you. I am sure that General Manager Tim Hovick was celebrating on Saturday night late in a way that was a celebration of celebrations with ASU beating USC. I am sure that Sunday he found his way to be around the Cardinal-Denver game and was probably celebrating moments and bummed at others. I'm sure he's pretty interested in what's going on with the Diamondbacks and their search for a manager. You know, the thing about Tim and the Santan Ford Company is they are all about the teams in Arizona. They're partners with ASU, they're partners with the Cardinals, they're partners with the Diamondbacks. It's not just talking about selling some vehicles. Hey, we got some F-150s over here. Yeah, we've got an Explorer over here. We have a Fusion over here. That's not what it's all about. It's the partnerships. It's being involved and ingrained within the community. When I walked away from television, Tim called me and said, wherever you go, whatever you do, just know that I'm there for you, to support you. And I gave him my vision of what I was going to do here with Sports 360 AZ. He's like, I'm in. 3 years of partnering together. And it's been terrific. And wherever we go, the Santan Ford Company comes with us. Now, how about you for your next vehicle? Stop on in. Support Santan Ford. They support us. Santan Ford, where it is all about you. Just go to santanford.com or swing on by. And go to Santan Ford just off the Santan 202 in Val Vista. That's Santan Ford, where it's all about you. In New Jersey, one New Jersey high school is taking a stand against bullying. And its powerhouse football team season is over. This is in New Jersey. Sayreville War Memorial High School season is over after evidence emerged of incidents of harassment, intimidation, hazing. This according to the superintendent Monday night during a meeting with parents. Quote from the superintendent. There was enough evidence to substantiate there were incidents of harassment, intimidation, bullying that took place on a pervasive level, on a wide scale level, and at a level in which the players knew, tolerated, and in general accepted. This happened on the junior varsity and freshman seasons. They are over as well. Guy canceled and wiped out the school's entire football seasons, varsity, JV, freshman. The prosecutor's office of Middlesex County and borough people were investigating allegations of significant and serious nature within the football program. An ongoing criminal investigation. NJ.com reported freshman players would stampede to the locker room after practices to get dressed before senior players would push them around. Okay, I don't know. It's been a long time since I've been out on the field, but when I was a freshman, the seniors chased me off the field too. Part of the deal. It was also reported an assistant coach on the varsity team was arrested, charged with steroid possession, disorderly persons offense following a traffic stop. Coach resigned his position, saying the arrest was not related to supplying football steroids to the program. So I'm reading through this, and it doesn't sound like there's a whole lot there, right? But then you start to read a little bit further and say that the decision to cancel this, the parents, this steroid assistant coach, that shouldn't be enough on its own right to cancel the season. And there's more problems there than that. I guess what I'm getting to is bring it back here to Arizona. So on the high school level, have I heard of programs being canceled because of bullying? Entire programs because of bullying? I'm always looking at things here in Arizona. Seems a little over the top to me. And I think our high school football out here is very progressive. I wouldn't say that around some parts of the country. I think we're one of the states that has gotten better and better. Steroids, I remember when I was over doing the TV thing, I went down to Yuma. Took a photographer down to Yuma. I did a whole series, week-long series during sweeps. Went to the news director and said, we need to do something on steroids, pressure on campus, parents not knowing what they're giving their kids. Bigger, stronger, faster. That's the whole deal. I got to get my kid bigger, stronger, faster. We went out and did the speed training thing. These guys that all say, I'm a speed coach, I'm a strength coach, and parents are writing checks right and left. It's essentially, for a lot of them, not all of them, but for a lot of these guys, are making money off of kids. That's how they're making their living in life. So we went into one of these huge stores that sell all this stuff that can make you bigger, stronger, faster. You can imagine the names of these types of stores. I'm not going to reveal which one, but safe to say, because I went to more than one, I would walk in and I'd get some nice, very young, just out of college or in college person in the middle of the day saying, well, you should take this, you should take this, you should take this, you should take this. And they really had no idea. And the parents were writing checks. We went to some people that analyzed what they were selling and what was being put in. And it's, yeah, this stuff is basically like taking a one-a-day vitamin. We went down to Yuma. We went across the border, and I purchased some steroids on camera. It's pretty simple to do. There are five kids that were down at a high school in Yuma, and they said they went across the border to go buy tacos. Of course they did. They went across the border to buy stuff to make them bigger, stronger, and faster. So the bullying side of this story to me is a little off the wall. The steroid side, it's an assistant coach who got pulled over. There's no proof that he sold to the players from what I could see in these stories that have been sent to me. And I've had more than one person shoot this over to me today and say, I'd like your thoughts on this. I want to bring this back into Arizona and say, when you cancel an entire football program, football sets the tone in high school for a great year on campus. Understand me on that. When you have a football team that is excelling on a high school campus, the kids have something to rally around, and they want to be a part of it. When a football program is not even there, people are like, football, not a big deal. No, football is part of success on campuses in high school. Sports360AZ.com. Then you have to be the most successful. AZ Central Sports. Ask Skyline High. They're undefeated this year. Some of these schools that never have great success, they're having a good run. Back with more after this timeout.